strict laws, not just those handed down by family and society, but its own laws. These laws, whether consciously or unconsciously made, govern how we live. They're the self-reprimands and resolutions that guide our behavior. They also include our prejudices and phobias. You abide by the laws of your mind, and your mind expects others to abide by its laws as well. As you may have noticed, you get along better with people who respect your laws and accept your views. Take a moment to consider how much importance you give to your rules and principles. It doesn't matter if they echo the principles of your parents or grandparents, because they're yours now. You may be able to state them clearly, and you may find fault with people who don't agree with those principles. You may even try to convince family members and friends to follow them. If they disagree, you might get angry. You might even pick a fight. As it turns out, most relationship problems have to do with your government wanting to be right and deciding every other government is wrong. Defending your own constitution, you often declare war on other nations and their people. Most people declare a thousand little wars over a lifetime, fighting every criticism and rival opinion. You get the sense that you're not being respected, so you become disrespectful. All of this inhibits your natural inclination to love and be generous. Your Congress has overruled your authenticity, which means your government has defeated its true purpose. We lose our sense of fairness and empathy when our personal laws take on too much importance. It's nice to have a code of behavior to live by, but that code should not have a negative impact on our relationships. We may not even recognize certain ideas as principles, but the character called me still uses them to legislate and to prosecute. It uses them to scold other people and to quarrel with itself. Understanding our own actions and reactions makes a change in our internal government possible. Think about the ideas that define you, ideas that tell the world who you are. You're an activist or a volunteer. You're a workaholic. You're a liberal or a conservative. You're loyal to a fault. You're God-fearing, patriotic, and the number one fan of your home team. These may seem like admirable ways to describe yourself, but have they made your life easier? How much time do you spend explaining and defending your position? Do you criticize people who describe themselves differently? Do you lay down the law to your family and friends, expecting them to be as fanatical as you are? You may still want to start a war or just win a few battles. Either way, opinions aren't where your power lies. They're just opinions. A good argument is still just an argument. Your beliefs and ideologies may feel as if they are the heart and soul of you, but they're not. Cherished ideas represent a way of thinking that makes us feel safe and possibly even superior. We invest them with a lot of emotional power, but they have no power of their own. Ideas and ideologies influence the way we conduct ourselves, which often feels right, but they can also harm our ability to interact and share time with others. Think about your beliefs. Are they more important than the truth of you? Are they more precious than love? To respect someone's right to an opinion is an act of love. It's a gift to others to let them share their views. It's not so difficult to listen without judgment. It's not that weird to say, "I don't know," and disarm the moment. Let others know they have a valid point. We don't always have to be right. We don't ever have to be me. Most of the battles we fight are in our heads. We grapple with ideas and constantly struggle with notions of right and wrong. And then we take the fight outside, arguing about truth and lies, good and evil. Our way is brilliant, their way is stupid. Like most conflicts between nations, Our wars with other people are public declarations of self-importance. We have a tendency to defend the main character of our story, often as if we were defending human life. Consider that for a moment. We're defending the integrity of something that isn't real. Maybe we're afraid of losing face, and that reveals the whole problem. We will lose our masks, in other words. We will abandon pretense. Unable to support what we are not, we will stand naked and authentic in front of the world, which may be what we've needed all along. If we refuse to quit old habits and pretenses, how can we experience the truth of us? We will continue to be at odds with the world. We will continue to see injustice everywhere and make our lives that much more difficult. The voice of me insists that we be right and that everyone else be wrong. But where do our ideas come from in the first place? If we dare to incorporate new ideas, what exactly is at stake? Who needs to be shielded from that disturbance? If we want peace of mind, we won't find it by arguing and insisting. We find unexpected peace when we stop trying to defend the main character. 7. Justice and the Judge. Making laws is up to Congress, one branch of government. We can say that the mind acts as a legislative branch, but the mind invents ways to implement its laws as well. So let's turn to the second branch of self-government, the judicial. The judicial branch decides how laws should be enforced and under what circumstances. Like outside governments, our mental government demands punishment for breaking the law. We have many different ways of exacting punishments on the people around us. Our punishments may be subtle or brutal, and we may turn our anger against ourselves. How many of us have tortured ourselves for eating too much, accomplishing too little, or for just not being good enough? People run their judicial systems differently. You may be tough on yourself, but lenient with others. You might be clueless about your own crimes, but highly sensitive to the crimes of other people. You may be a loving person to others, but cruel to yourself, or the other way around. Most people are capable of cruelty if they're angry or insecure enough. Before you can make changes to your particular justice system, you need to acknowledge how it works. We all need to consider our actions. We can ask ourselves, is this response fair? Am I being respectful in this situation? Would I want to be treated this way? Respect is a word that's impressed on us in childhood, but we were never given a chance to understand it fully. In spite of what many of us were told, no one has to earn respect. Everyone is different, but every human body is a copy of life itself. Every creature gives proof to the dance of energy and matter. That's reason enough to show respect. Respect makes it possible to see beyond someone's opinions and customs. It makes it possible to see the truth. And truth frees us from our deceptions. There's no real justice when a government is operating blindly. When the mind is reacting automatically, we make errors in judgment. We pay a high price for our assumptions, causing unnecessary suffering. If we refuse to see things as they are, we can get disappointed. We blame and we carry grudges. We show contempt for ourselves and others. How does any of this make us better human beings? How does this make us feel safer or more at peace with ourselves? Respect is the solution to injustice. Heaven, by any interpretation, is ruled by respect. We create heaven on earth by respecting ourselves and every living thing. Respect makes our interactions with other people go more smoothly. At home, in our social lives, and in our business dealings, respect wins allies. We don't have to like people to show them respect. All human relationships thrive on mutual respect, whether or not we can agree on ideas. We can't give what we don't have, so respect has to begin with us. Not all of us were taught self-respect in childhood. We may not have been encouraged to respect our bodies and the bodies of other humans. As adults, we can now assess how kind we are to ourselves. How fair are we? How severe is our justice system, particularly when it comes to our own behavior? Can we forgive ourselves? Do we even know how? Just as forgiveness is essential to bring healing to a country, it is also essential to a healthy mind. Throughout human history, the practice of forgiveness has turned mortal enemies into compassionate allies. This happens in our own lives as well. Forgiveness puts old grievances to rest. We often resist the impulse to forgive because we think it absolves bad people from a just punishment. Guilt or innocence is not the point. Forgiveness releases each of us from the need to hate. Forgiveness takes the past off our shoulders so we can go forward without its burden. For nations and individuals alike, the past is a corpse we shouldn't want to carry around with us. Memory should teach, not torture us. We want to be well again, happy and whole. By forgiving a trespass, we release ourselves from torment. Consider the way you use past memories to hurt yourself time and again. There's no justice in any of it. You feel the pain over and over, and no one is affected but you. Remembering makes you miserable, and life becomes miserable for those close to you. You overlook the present moment until it too becomes the past. The future becomes clouded by hatred. All the real moments are lost to the moments that never existed. So, of course, you feel you've missed something. We were all domesticated through a system of rewards and punishments. The rewards might have been positive attention for our behavior, words of praise or gestures of affection. We might have been treated to ice cream for a job well done, or allowed to spend a day playing outside with a friend. Punishment could mean a lack of response from our parents or harsh words. A punishment might have meant getting spanked or being subjected to worse physical abuses. But it also felt like punishment to us when we were blamed for something or made to feel guilty and ashamed. As adults, we've learned to reward ourselves for our good deeds and to blame ourselves for the bad. We feel ashamed without knowing why. We submit to the kind of punishments we tolerated as children, and we offer ourselves no forgiveness. As parents sometimes do to kids, we neglect our bodies or judge them harshly. Refusing to take responsibility for the stories we tell, we blame the human body for our discomfort and pain. Then we go a step farther. We invent other characters to take the blame. Having grown up believing in goblins and Santa Claus, we're used to the feeling of being watched and judged. We expect to be punished by someone for something. Why shouldn't we feel anxious and neurotic? We fear the wrath of whatever God we were taught to believe in. We want to appease angels and blame devils for the awful things we do. We watch ourselves in action. We condemn and we punish. It seems we're willing to remain immature just to avoid taking charge of our reality. By imagining ourselves as the central character in our life story, we add ourselves to a long list of childhood fictional creatures. Except me seems to be the only one who isn't taking the blame. We say things like, my bad, and I have only myself to blame. But we're not talking about the mind, or about the main character of our story. We're almost always blaming the human body. We judge it, and we usually find it guilty. When the main character acts like a big judge, our bodies react in fear. Me is the schoolyard bully in our world, ready to punch and intimidate. The main character of everyone's story is the rule maker, the judge, and the enforcer, and also the president of a very private nation. So we need to pay attention to the way we speak through me. A forgiving mind is just and fair. Forgiveness creates immunities from pain. We don't have to punish ourselves for past mistakes or invent new mistakes out of our imagination. Whatever the circumstances, we are all doing our best. Tomorrow, we can do even better, but not if we're afraid of the one who is in charge of our judicial system. Not if we're afraid of the judge. We all need checks and balances, which we can only exercise through self-awareness. We need to make sure our laws don't continue to harm the human being. We need to ensure that our reality is not being ruled by a lunatic. How do lunatics behave? They disrespect the human body and punish it for their own bad choices. They lie to themselves. They take everything personally. They invent conflicts and enjoy the drama. They let self-importance make decisions for them. They let fear control them. Fighting over opinions is a little insane. Insisting on having the last word is exhausting. Putting conditions on love sounds self-defeating. Still, we do crazy things like that all the time, and we suffer for it. It seems we make all kinds of excuses to suffer. Suffering is the only addiction for most of us, and we find many ways to create it. We want to be right at any cost and suffer when we're proven wrong. We suffer for our own judgments, and we continually imagine that we're being judged. We suffer for our own bad habits, blaming cigarettes, drugs, or alcohol. We blame food. We blame sports. We blame everything on our upbringing. We blame loved ones for our unhappiness. And, of course, we blame the physical body for letting us down. This may not be easy to admit. It may not seem easy to fix. But with a little insight, we can make a corrupt system impeccable again. We can respect ourselves for no reason and every reason. We can become our own champion and best friend, refusing to suffer, whatever the circumstance. Why does any human suffer? The problem is almost always leadership. Reliable leaders take care of their country, their body, first. Aware leaders will not believe the lies they tell themselves. Effective leaders don't submit to fear or intimidation. The mind leads because we allow it to lead. We believe in the character it created and allow it to speak on our behalf. We believe its opinions and its recollections, but me does not represent the truth. The mind cannot duplicate the truth. Truth is pure energy. Becoming aware of ourselves as the energy or truth is an important revelation. The mind will continue to talk, sounding for all the world like a knowledgeable friend, but we don't have to believe it. We can rise above the voice of me at any time. Me is the point of view of life's reflection. It is an artificial intelligence. Life's information is filtered through all the thoughts and characteristics we've given ourselves. The main character has its own intelligence, but every me is different, depending on the development of the brain and circumstances that affect the physical body. Each of us identifies with that character, so we find it difficult to separate me from reality. So it follows that we allow me to rule without any interference. 8. The Commander-in-Chief. By trying to answer the question, who am I? You can begin to discern who you are not. You are not your body, but you are the guardian of its welfare and integrity. You are not the stories you tell about yourself. You are not the main character of those stories, but you believe you are. So completely that you are sometimes willing to defend its point of view with your life. You are not your mind, but you are responsible for the message it delivers to your body. You're also responsible for the message it delivers through your body to the rest of humanity. Your mind has learned to operate like a government composed of three branches. It has a Congress that makes up laws. A judicial branch enforces those laws through a system of rewards and punishments, similar to the methods your family and community use to domesticate you. In this chapter, we will cover the executive branch and the president in charge of making decisions. First, let's understand that the leader of your own nation is not real. The one who rules your little government is something out of your imagination, but nevertheless has the power to affect your world. So what kind of leader do you want to be? Remember, you can't give what you don't have. If you want to be more compassionate, you must treat yourself with compassion. If you want to represent the truth to others, stop lying to yourself. If you want to love someone in the truest sense, love yourself without conditions. As with any government, the mind needs to make decisions that serve the body. The mind's addictions become the body's addictions, and so we should all stop making excuses to suffer. Whether the physical body is healthy or sick, it needs a trustworthy caretaker. It can't flourish when it's being pushed beyond reason. It needs comfort, not criticism. It needs messages of delight, not doom. It needs to laugh. Responsible leaders rule fairly. Wise commanders know the power they wield over other minds and hearts, and they use that power carefully. They are aware of imbalances and prejudices within their administration. Without conscious leadership, the entire country suffers. Consider what kind of leader you are or want to be, and consider the people your leadership will affect on a daily basis. If we want to preside over this body, our country, more wisely than we have been doing, we need to give our governing style a fair assessment. We need to be honest with ourselves, admit to our mistakes, and be willing to change. All three branches of government need to be accountable for the happiness of the human being. If we are unwilling to pay attention to our personal evolution, the body will continue to pay a price. The main character of our story, me, wants to preside over everything. The problem, of course, is that me has long been a victim. Me feels persecuted by the system or judged by society. Me is forever on the defensive. And so how can me be a strong leader? How can me be an impartial judge? In the same way, me could be perpetually angry or resentful. If me is constantly critical, how can it work harmoniously with other branches of government? If me is a judge and a bully, how can it achieve the wisdom necessary to guide a nation? How do informal agreements get made between leaders? And how do treaties get approved? For many people, a victim has been acting as commander-in-chief of their country's armed forces. That puts the whole country at risk. What is a victim? Someone who complains all the time. Someone who sees personal injustice everywhere and insists on being treated fairly. Clearly, there's nothing fair about one individual wanting the benefit of everyone's attention. There's no justice in a system ruled by one person's needs, with little concern for the needs of others. When we think we're victimized, we become unreasonable. When we're insecure, small battles grow into major conflicts. When war breaks out, who pays the ultimate price? The body does, and it's hard to generate happiness again. We feel physically assaulted and dispirited, simply because of what we believe to be true. Spirit means life, and life is the truth of what we are. We are spiritually mature when we are in a close relationship with life, when we can tell the real from the unreal. Wonderful relationships can't happen when we're obsessed with me and all things that concern me. Peace won't happen as long as we're waging wars within us and around us. Our bodies feel the stress and anxiety we create by constantly being a victim or a judge. This makes it especially important to consider the way we lead, how we legislate, how we execute decisions, and how we choose our punishments. Our bodies feel the abuses first, but they aren't the only ones. How do we treat all the citizens of our nation, those who work with us, live with us, and depend on us? We can be an example of what bad governing does to good human beings. Or we can show them what it takes to live functional, happy lives. Physical development is built into our biological blueprint, but spiritual evolution needs our attention and our will. How the main character tells its story affects the mood of the country and its closest allies. Humans are social animals, and the mind mirrors our need for other bodies. In other words, it likes to connect with other minds. It sets up strongholds in other dreams by sending its best ambassadors, words and ideas. It sets up embassies in other people's realities, claiming a little bit of influence for itself. Once we inhabit space in other people's minds, it's tempting to interfere in their business. We might question their culture, overlooking the fact that we're in their world, not ours. The positive effect we have on people is the result of our respect for their traditions and beliefs. Peace is the result of honoring the way other humans do things without imposing our laws on them. We all want peace. We all want to feel that our world is safe. We want to feel secure, and we want to feel proud of ourselves. It's funny how we love to praise the country we live in, but have never learned to praise the body that serves as a home to us. Our physical body is an extension of who we are. It houses our mind. It is home to the infinite energy that runs through us. Are we proud of that? Are we willing to protect it, even above our favored opinions? When you travel, you might find that people of other cultures like to hear you describe your country. It feels good to tell them about its natural beauty and its many freedoms. Listen to what you tell people about your body as you go through an ordinary day. Do you talk about it with love and respect, or with derision? What about its leadership? Does it inspire or intimidate? Is it sane, generous, and able to rise above its own story? Does it make people feel safe? How proud are you of the body that offers so many privileges? The leader of your country is the one who is perceiving and describing everything. The one reading these words is the main character of your story. You are the president of your own nation, and you submit to all the rules you've put into place, based on what you've observed in your lifetime. You can see that you're the one who creates and enforces the rules, whether they seem fair or not. Your influence goes as far as your words go. Your command is as strong as your personal authority. If you're able to see how your nation is run, you may also notice that everyone around you is the leader of their own nation. Your mother is a government of her own. Your father, your siblings, and your friends are ruled by their own governments. You seek opportunities to participate in those governments. A government is influenced by the conversations of its people, the ideas that we send by texting, talking, singing, or filming. Go into other minds. Our ambassadors reach other nations, and we receive ambassadors from other nations. We all have influence on our governments, just as we have influence on our families, tribes, and cities. Together, we influence humanity and the equilibrium of life on Earth. Being aware of that kind of power should encourage us to use it responsibly. Humans can't control the planet, but they can hurt it. As president, we can't actually control the body we live in, but we can hurt it. We can't stop the body from getting old or sick, but we can injure it through our actions, reactions, and neglect. We can sedate it or intoxicate it. We can poison and corrupt it. And we do. Corruption, once again, is the problem. Truth is the solution. What is truth? The truth cannot be explained with words. In fact, words take us farther from the truth, creating a reality of their own. However, we all know instinctively that there is more to us than words and theories. We were whole before we learned a language. We can feel whole again without relying on symbols to speak for us. Words are our emissaries, but again, they are not the truth of us. Close your eyes, and you can feel energy moving through you. You can feel it running under your skin, making it warm. Notice your breath, your heartbeat, your flickering eyelids. Move your fingers, your legs, your head, and feel the power that commands every motion. That power is life, flowing into all the little universes of you. Every emotion is real. Every sensory perception is telling you the truth. The thoughts that manipulate your emotions are not real. What you are is pure energy, the force of life. Nothing else is real. The mind is a mirror reflection of the truth, and mirrors merely attempt to represent what is real. The reflection is only as good as the quality of the mirror. Life's energy is real. It is what you are, what we all are. We don't have to prove our worth. We forget that, thinking we have to fight for recognition and then fight to maintain it. We fight for attention. We fight over ideas and personal opinions at the expense of our emotional health. We fight to understand ourselves, and we fight to be understood. Life is truth, and it doesn't need to be understood. Truth doesn't need proof or even faith to survive. And it doesn't need our stories. Truth existed before stories, before humanity. And truth will continue after all the storytellers are gone. We don't need a thought or a theory to show us the truth. Truth can be felt in our loving and in our enduring passion to live. If we understand how we govern ourselves, we can create a more benevolent government. We can change the temperament of its leader. Most of us are intimidated by power, but eager to use power against ourselves. We can see violence everywhere, but not the kind of violence we inflict on our own bodies. We've tortured it to make it thinner, stronger, or more attractive. We've been unkind to the body, often trying to control its natural impulses. Seeing that, we can change. The human body has served us loyally, and it deserves loyalty in return. We imagine that life looks upon us favorably or treats us badly. But life is what we are. Our minds can imagine so many things. So imagine how the mind can conspire with life. Imagine giving up control in this moment and surrendering to life. Imagine going through a day without having to be me. Using a little bit of imagination, we can govern ourselves in new ways and come up with solutions to recurring problems. After all, imagining and problem solving are what the mind does best. We're all in the process of creating the reality we think we deserve. And each of us has defined the central character. Each of us sees the world through the eyes of me, and me is on autopilot, making rules and executing them without full awareness. Like all great stories, your personal story could use a hero. Your body could use a savior. As it happens, the only one who can save you is the main character of your story. The one you call me is not real, but it affects real things. Rather than perceiving the truth, most of us yield to an inner voice. We listen to our own thoughts. We believe them and obey them at the expense of our happiness. We focus on past conversations, past moments, past years. It may have taken time and patience to learn those habits, but they can be undone with far less effort. We have the tools. We have attention, memory, and imagination to guide us forward. If me is the problem, me is also the solution. Your country already has a leader who wants to be wise and compassionate. If you're asking life's deeper questions, you may already be a president who's prepared to put the welfare of the country first. You have a legislature that wants to revise its laws and a justice system that respects all individuals. You can sense what is real and what is not. You're ready to take the next step. Change requires action. One action leads to another and another until new habits become automatic and changes become evident. In time, people's reactions change and they see you differently. There's no need to look to other governments for solutions. You have all you need to build a healthy and prosperous nation. You have the will and you have the awareness. So if what we call reality is virtual, and me is not real, then what about the world around us? What else isn't actually real? What other pearls of wisdom have we overlooked? Ask yourself, what is real? 9. The second pearl. What is real? You will know what is real when you accept what is not real. Once we learn to challenge our stories, we get a sense of who we're not. Seeing that, we can become aware of the truth. We can see everything from an infinite point of view. You've grown accustomed to seeing yourself as a product of life, and perhaps even as a victim of circumstance. By shifting your attention, you can see from another perspective. You are the artist of this creation. You are energy itself. By asking the question, what is real, we're challenging what we think we know. Nothing is quite as we imagine it. Think of the brain as a mirror. If our hands reached for an image in a mirror, we would touch glass, not the thing whose image it reflects. The mind uses information received by the brain to create a picture of reality. Thought is the reflection. If we tried to physically reach for a thought, we couldn't. We look in a glass mirror to get an idea of how our bodies look. We depend on an accurate reflection, but we always get some degree of distortion. The mind reflects the truth in its particular way. It sees through the filter of existing ideas and opinions. It sees what it has been taught to expect. To one degree or another, we're all perceiving warped reflections of the truth. Why is this important? Because as we discovered earlier, we identify ourselves with the mind. We're totally convinced we are the main character in the mind's reality. Imagine what would happen if the reflection became aware of itself. This would probably create a huge disturbance. What if you realized you weren't your thoughts and beliefs? That you weren't even me. It may not be easy to imagine. It may not seem like fun. Maybe you find just talking about minds, mirrors, and reflections disturbing. That's a good sign. It means you've just challenged a belief of some kind. You can deny the disturbance, of course, or you can recognize it, and even take advantage of it. If you acknowledge that your mind is a mirror reflection of what is real, and not a very accurate one, you can see that yours is only one interpretation of reality, one of more than 7 billion individual interpretations. Then you can experiment. You can put what that reflection is telling you in a reasonable perspective and move your attention to your senses. You can begin to notice how your body feels emotionally and physically. Are those feelings coming from a memory? Are they reacting to an ongoing narrative? What are you telling yourself? And why? When you're not thinking, your body is free to feel, without your interference. It will regulate emotional moods on its own. It will be able to tell you when something is physically wrong, and you will notice. You will be able to modify your habitual responses, like anger, indignation, and fear. Emotions will inform you, which is what emotions are supposed to do. No emotion should become addictive or chronic and sicken you. Imagine it, and it can happen. Imagine finding emotional balance automatically. Imagine checking your thoughts all the time, no matter what is going on around you. It sounds funny, but by not thinking so much, you'll bring yourself closer to answering the question, what is real? By perceiving without thinking, you'll notice what isn't real now and never was. Pure perception is not about what you tell yourself. It doesn't rely on what other people tell you. Stop thinking, and you're able to observe, listen, and feel. The truth is obvious in everything you see and experience. Be still for a moment. Can you hear the voice of me commenting on this moment? It might be explaining what you're reading right now, or planning what to do when you stop reading. It might be distracting itself, making comments about someone else, what she did, what he said. Maybe it's enjoying conversations that haven't happened and are unlikely ever to happen. Your thoughts follow a storyline, often with a beginning, a middle, and an end. The story includes familiar characters, most of whom you think you know well. Your reality is populated by other characters, not so much by actual people, but the things you think you know about those people. Events happen, and the people exist, but your understanding of them is the stuff of dreams. We're all dreaming reality. When we're awake, our dream is typically based on real events, but we each interpret events differently. We see and hear things according to our particular beliefs and assumptions. As we've seen, everyone believes the president no matter what he or she is saying, and we all obey laws that exist within our personal reality. Asleep, we're still dreaming, but the laws are different, if laws exist at all. The law of gravity may not exist in our sleeping dreams. The laws of physics are ignored, and basic logic becomes irrelevant. Our waking dream follows physical laws and social and civic laws, but sleeping dreams happily ignore them. Either way, we're dreaming. We are all making distinct and separate impressions of this moment, wherever we are and whatever we're doing. The moment is real, but we're telling our own story about it. This is the wonderful magic of the human mind, to turn real things into symbols and impressions. But we shouldn't forget that the body responds emotionally to our kind of magic. The waking dream can be mastered just as we can alter the course of our nighttime dreaming. We can remind ourselves before falling asleep to wake up in the middle of a recurring nightmare. We can leave clues to pinch ourselves or to challenge threatening characters in a sleeping dream. The same is true of our waking life. It's simple enough to remind ourselves that we're dreaming all the time, even as we go through an ordinary day. Other people are dreaming too, and their reality is based on what they think is true. It has nothing to do with us, unless we agree that it does. Everyone has the power to steer their reality in a new direction. Everyone has a chance to alter its message. We created the idea of ourselves by listening to the opinions of people closest to us. They told us their version of who we are. We can't change the way other people perceive us, and it's not important to try. We can, however, take charge of our own dream. At any point, we can modify the mirror so that it will better reflect the truth. We can stop assuming we know better than anyone else and start to ask questions. We can stop insisting that we're right. It's not a sign of weakness to surrender the need to know. We can even question our own knowledge. We can disregard our own advice and trust life more. By modifying the mirror, we alter the face of me. By adopting energy's point of view, we let go of our small obsessions. By seeing beyond our own concerns, we can appreciate the infinite landscape. Each of us is pure energy, caught up in the dream of matter. We assume we know who we are. We assume we can discern what is real. We believe all our assumptions are true, until we start to doubt. That's the first step in answering, what is real? Our sense of reality starts to shift when we question what we believe. 10. Life under tyranny. There is only one truth, energy. Energy is the force that creates and sustains the universe. We use different words for it. Life, truth, intent, love. They all point to the same thing. Energy is life. Matter is a copy of life. It is a copy of truth. The mind is a reflection of that truth. And like that painting we mentioned, it offers many clues about the artist. Our impression of reality is changing constantly. In that sense, there's no solid ground under our feet. Reality isn't what we imagine it is in this moment. In fact, reality isn't what it seemed to be a minute ago. It will be something else a minute from now, an hour from now, and it won't stop changing. We'd like to think it's fixed, solid. We'd like our impression of reality to be everyone's impression. We like to feel safe, knowing that the world is what we think it is. But impressions change, don't they? Everything is shifting, transforming, whether or not we notice. The main character is also shifting constantly. It all started when we were toddlers, learning to speak and then to think. Thinking is the act of talking to ourselves. We mimicked other characters, saying what they said and thinking what they thought, until we felt confident to narrate our own dream. The me that we first imagined wasn't the me that went to kindergarten, learning to interact with other me's. Me isn't what it was then, or what it became in college, or what it was when we first got married. The me who is now a parent can hardly remember the me who was single. The person we think we are has changed over the years. As we accumulated experiences and processed new information, it has acted selfishly and generously. It has been reckless, and it has been responsible. It has been an unreliable caretaker for the physical body, as well as a devoted one. The characteristics of me are changing constantly. As me changes, so does its impression of reality. Every human sees reality a little differently, or a lot differently, from every other. Reality changes with our changing circumstances. Reality looks different according to where we're sitting, standing, or walking. If we take one step in any direction, our view of the world changes. Instantly, we can see things that weren't apparent before. If we lie down or stand on a ladder, we've changed our point of view of things. If we're riding a bike or driving a car, scenes fly by at different speeds. What we call reality is more of a moving picture show. Change the country, language, or culture, and our sense of reality gets a shock. Nothing smells the same or sounds the same. No one talks like us. Our smallest routines are disrupted. People everywhere find ways to feed and shelter themselves, but their ways are distinct. They raise children and provide for their families. But the rules change with the scenery. Reality's landscape is constantly evolving. If we're okay with this, we can start to wake up and pay attention. If we experience a traumatic event, we get jolted out of our normal perceptions and the world is suddenly not the same. It may never be the same. A car accident, or the loss of a loved one, makes existence feel threatening and unpredictable. In a crisis, the mind stops its narrative and isn't sure how to pick it up again. Time slows, speeds up, or becomes irrelevant. Why does tragedy have this effect on us? Tragedy creates changes that seem too big for the mind to accept. It struggles to put the old me into the context of a new reality. For a mind that hasn't learned to be a friend, an ally to the body, the struggle usually ends in failure. We feel heartbroken and abandoned by life. The mind is an ally when it adapts to abrupt changes, whether those changes are tragic or gratifying. Our existence includes all events and all possibilities. Every experience is an integral part of being alive. All emotions are acceptable. We don't need to play a role or act out our feelings for dramatic effect. We don't need to follow the mind's programming, responding to events the way we were taught to respond. We don't have to follow old laws. At any time, in any situation, we can experience events from the perspective of life itself. The law of life, we can say, is to create and never stop creating. Transformation is life's chief characteristic. Life has no me. It doesn't feel victimized and never casts blame. In the infinite picture, there is no judge. Life makes no judgments. From life's point of view, there are no crimes or penalties, only transformations. Energy transforms, but never stops. It is everywhere, it is infinite, and it is eternal. We know that, but we don't know ourselves as energy. We see ourselves as separate from it, and consequently, separate from truth. We live in a world of rules, and rarely gaze beyond that world. Those rules become irrelevant when we sleep, but fall back into place as soon as the mind wakes up. Almost as soon. There's a moment before we open our eyes when we're not sure where we are or who we are. The moment passes quickly because we've learned to reconstruct ourselves automatically. We've done this so many times we don't notice the process. We open our eyes and we remember. I'm at home. Or, I'm still in a hotel. In Denver, I think. No, it's Monday, so I'm in Dayton. Having established where we are, we put together the pieces of who we are. And there are many, many little pieces. Again, the process is automatic and barely noticeable. We remember who we went to bed with and roll over to make sure. We remember what we were worried about when we went to sleep the night before and begin to worry again. We remind ourselves what reality we're living in and start the dream all over again. If we slowed the process down, it would probably be like reading a fairy tale to a child, sounding something like this. And then he remembered he was Timmy, who fell asleep under a willow tree after running away from his home, which stood on the edge of a village called. We put our personal story together in a fraction of a second, get the appropriate emotions on board, and then me is ready to face the day. If our sense of reality hasn't undergone any recent disruptions, most of us settle into a familiar pattern of thought and behavior. Of course, these are patterns that have been constrained by laws. Our laws. Like little kids expecting to be bullied at school, we wake up most days with a vague sense of guilt. We've probably messed up somehow and can only hope that we don't get caught. We hope we're not exposed as liars or pretenders. We hope we're not going to be judged or contradicted. And then we step out of the house armed with our best stories. With all our defenses, we still won't avoid conflict. We will surely clash with other opinions and offend other feelings. The best of us get defensive and even aggressive on occasion. Even the most even-tempered person can get provoked. Even the most honorable president acts unwisely now and then. We govern our world poorly sometimes, disappointing ourselves and the people we care about. Sometimes we may inadvertently start a war. As long as the war continues in our own heads, our relationships with others will be compromised. When we fail to get along with ourselves, our efforts to get along with other people will be frustrated. Our internal private tyrannies grow into public tyrannies, and soon family members are fighting, friends fall out, and entire communities are in conflict. Everyone needs to be right. Everyone is yelling, and no one is listening. Listening is essential. We need to listen to ourselves first. It's important to learn our mind's particular language. Even silently, it uses words to accuse and to demoralize the body. Words it learned long ago. What an idiot, we say to ourselves. I'm such a dummy. I'm hideous. I'm a freak. Are we listening to this? The disrespect is clear, and it will be reflected in the way other people speak to us. If we listen, we can change the way we communicate with ourselves. We can base even this relationship on respect. Where is the compassion we're naturally inclined to give a friend, a child, or a favorite pet? It's there, of course, but we never learn to treat our own bodies as well as we would a pet dog or cat. We can just as easily choose to say things to ourselves like, "Come on, you're amazing, but right now you're just tired." We can follow a curse with an apology, telling the body we're sorry for the insult. We can laugh at ourselves with affection. It's not so hard to learn the language of respect. We can be patient with our blunders. "Man, I really love you," we can say out loud. "Silly thing, you crack me up," is a fair response to an ordinary mistake. If we're fair to ourselves, we will judge the world fairly. If we keep our inner dialogue honest, we can build trust between mind and body, the most important relationship there is. As you've begun to see, we rule ourselves in ways we don't notice. The body notices, however, and responds to our tyrannies the way it would respond to physical threats. It responds to toxic thoughts the way it might respond to a virus. It fights the invasion and often loses, even if we don't notice. Self-judgment is an assault, and so is self-contempt. It's an attack on the body to pity ourselves, to worry, or to obsess. The most amazing thing about the body is that it recovers from most abuses on its own. Cuts heal. Broken bones mend. Diseases are attacked and defeated. When our planet changes temperature, it makes chemical adjustments and stabilizes. Our bodies do the same. However, if the assaults to the body are constant and long overlooked, the damage may become irreversible. Our attitudes about ourselves strike us physically, and so we need to play a different role. Each of us needs to be the peacekeeper, not the tyrant. We want to be conscious guardians of freedom for the human body we occupy. We are adults now, whose parents and siblings should no longer run our lives. Many of us are parents now, or even grandparents. We're in charge of our actions and our reactions. We're capable leaders in our own right. Then why do we insist on waging internal wars? Why do we build prisons for ourselves and make our bodies live within them? Why do we insist that other people must suffer with us? When we feel badly treated, we fight back. When our notions of reality are rigid, we feel trapped. Of course we feel like running away. Naturally, we want to know what real freedom feels like. So what's stopping us? 11. Getting out of jail. We all remember what it was like to be a teenager, sick of the indignities of childhood. We wanted to break away from our parents. We wanted to escape the prison of home and family. Some of you reading this may still be teenagers, but even in adulthood, most people have the impulse to break free of something. Even in old age, we want to exercise our independence. This impulse to be free is natural.